Some of the stories that we have in the collection include Colombians who went to China in the, I think it was in the 40s, 50s. And those men in particular had to endure. Many of them in the interviews have actually shared that they witnessed mass killings at the time. Some of them themselves went to jail, and the Colombians themselves even lost some priests at that time through being killed. So going on most missions abroad does involve confronting the reality that death may be close at hand, be that for a health reason or be that for a security reason. I know myself, I was in Mozambique for 12 years, and like 1 year I had malaria 5 times in the year. And you also note in your relationship with the people, death is very close to them. The number of children that they lose at a very young age, like 20,000 children still today are dying in our world every day directly as a result of diseases from malnutrition. So what I'm trying to say is that death is very close to many of the missionaries who serve in the third world. And even the reality of your own death comes home to you in terms of health and sometimes in terms of security as well. Like even in my own life in the relatively recent past, like I have been sleeping at night in our village hearing gunfire and rockets going overhead, you know, in Mozambique where the rebels were trying to take over the town again. So that's a regular occurrence and something that is accepted by the missionary as part of the life that he or she has chosen.
And often they wouldn't have the opportunity to come back. I mean, today people do volunteer services overseas, or they go over, they might go for 6 months, a year, maybe 3 years, but they have that option to very flexibly and very easily come back. For them, it was a life commitment.
I can remember when I can't remember the exact age I was, but I think I was 13 or 14. And I can remember standing on the side beside the Liffey down on the docks with my father. And I can see my aunt up on the back of the boat. She was a nun. And she was leaving that day to head off to South Africa. This was in the 50s. And at that time, the understanding was that she would never be home again. Most religious who went abroad in the 50s, 60s, it probably started changing around the 70s. But everyone who went before that went with the idea that they would never come home again. And that was, again, that was accepted as part of the vocation that you were choosing. Now, sure, it was hard, but you felt that that was part of what you committed yourself to. So it wasn't as hard as it might appear to us today.
Some of them did then afterwards come home, even though, you know, they would have spent their life there. But then when they retired, they came home sometimes, maybe because their lives were in danger, and sometimes maybe because the order wanted them back in Ireland. It was a huge culture shock, though, wasn't it, for them to come back?
Yeah, it's very difficult for anybody who has spent a significant time abroad working in the third world, especially those who have spent all their lives there. Like, it would be true to say that for somebody who spent all their lives abroad, it really is much harder for them to come home to Ireland, their home, than it was for them to go to their country of work originally. It's 10 times harder, because the Ireland that they know now is so totally different from the Ireland that they knew when they were growing up. I can give you a little example myself. I remember on my first trip home from Mozambique, I was picked up at the airport, and I worked out in the bush in Mozambique. I was picked up at the airport, and we went for a coffee to the Burlington Hotel on the way home, you know. And as I was going into the Burlington Hotel, I noticed that they were doing renovations, and they had these three skips outside the side of the Burlington. And what I wouldn't have given for the contents of those three skips out in Mozambique is, you know. And it's little things like that that kind of hit you right between the eyes when you come home. And also the choices in terms of food when you go into supermarkets. The advertising on the television for all sorts of creams to keep you younger or whatever. I mean, this is so far removed from the reality of the vast majority of the people in the South that it actually comes across sometimes as even crude to somebody who's coming from that kind of situation where people have absolutely nothing, where you you know, the people you see in church on a Sunday, you know, and you're talking to them about how much God loves them. And you know that over 50% of them haven't had a decent meal in 3 months. You know, when you're in situations like that, it changes your whole attitude to materialism and what's important, what's really important and what's not important. Personally, I think it's immoral for anybody to be in the position of earning hundreds of thousands of euro every year in a world where 20,000 babies are dying every day from malnutrition. And any time I get an opportunity to preach along those lines, I have no problem in saying that. I think it's totally immoral, all the financial difficulties that we're experiencing here in the world at the moment, in the first world, and all the people who are suffering, who they have a much better life than the people of the south, but still they're down to their last penny trying to pay their mortgages, trying to feed their kids. And I mean, I think there is a very serious moral question about the whole financial system that we operate in the first world. And it's more than just finding ways to fix the problem, as we hear every day on the radio, whether France and Germany are going to resolve it or not. I think it's more, much more than that. And I have a basic fear that even the system may collapse completely, and will not be serving any of us, and may contribute to an even greater poverty down the road, even here in the first world.